In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks so much for joining us, and happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
How long's it been since it's been the three of us? I feel like it's been a while.
I missed you.
I know. We missed you, too.
As I was saying before we started recording, Brian and Brett's quarantine haircuts and facial hair stylings are starting to look more and more alike.
Probably all men's of our age are probably starting to look a bit similar.
As I told Brian, it's like twins, only he's Arnold and I'm Danny DeVito, so it all works out. Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I play video games. And what's been getting me through this week is a little video game on the PlayStation 4 called The Last of Us Part 2, because what better way to escape a pandemic than to play a video game about an even worse, more scary pandemic, but it's been a lot of fun, if you could say that. So the premise of the game is it takes place around 25 years after a fungal outbreak pretty much wipes out most of the U.S. And so everybody is living now in settlements in different parts of the country, and they're basically just kind of fighting for themselves, fending for themselves, all while there are these zombies that are roaming around. So you play as Ellie, who is a 19-year-old girl that a lot of people remember from the first game, because players were escorting her across the country because she held what would have been a potential cure for this outbreak. So part two takes place a few years after the end of that game, and it basically just follows her, Ellie and Joel, who was her companion that was helping her get across the country. They're living in Wyoming in a settlement, and so a very traumatic event happens, and so she leaves the settlement to just basically follow through on what happened and resolve everything there. So I don't want to give too much away because it's a pretty big spoiler. It's a lot of fun. It's entertaining. It's very intense. It's kind of heavy, and it's kind of weird playing it with everything going on now, but I still am finding the story. The story is really fascinating. I think the way they treated both characters is really well done, and it just, as depressing and as heavy as the subject matter is, I still found myself wanting to play it and finish it through. And you know, I'm really glad I did. It's a very great experience.
I'm Brian Truitt. I watch movies. Although what's getting me through this week is DC's Stargirl, which is, I guess, it's on. I've been watching screeners of it. I think it's on CW, and DC Universe until that goes away finally and turns into HBO Max. But it's kind of fun. I like it. It's about a teenage girl who moves to like a Midwestern town, and she thinks her dead dad might be a superhero, and she inherits this cosmic staff of Starman, who used to be in the Justice Society of America, who her dad, she thinks her dad's Starman, but now she gets this cosmic staff. She becomes Stargirl, and it's kind of like this, it's like Sky High, but like a lot more serious, where like the Justice Society of America, or the old villains that the JSA used to fight, are now running this like weird small little town. I'm a few episodes in, and they haven't really revealed why they're in this small little town or what's really going on. But I kind of do like the young teenage superhero-ness of it all. And Luke Wilson plays her dad or stepdad, and then he is also Stripesy. It used to be Stripesy, who was the sidekick of Starman. And it's weird seeing Luke Wilson play like teenagers' dads, because I don't feel like he's that old, but he's fine. I mean, he's fine. He doesn't do much television, but he's cool. It's not Doom Patrol or anything, but it's decent.
I'm Kelly Lawler. I watch television, and what is getting me through this week is not a TV show. It's a book series by Holly Black, who is a very good fantasy YA, mostly author. And my sister just sent me one of her books because she thought I'd like it and to cheer me up, which, you know, in quarantine made me burst into tears, obviously. But I read the first of the Folk of the Air series, which was called The Cruel Prince. I read it all on Saturday, and then I had to order the next ones because it was really good. It's about, there's this like fairy civilization, but not like tiny Tinkerbells, like big guys with pointy ears and like kind of claws and horns and tails that like lives that like, you know, is hidden from humans. And this one fairy kidnaps like his fairy daughter and her human half-sisters, brings them to the fairy world, and they grow up there. And then they're like trying to make a place in there, but they've been kidnapped, and like, and everyone discriminates against them because they're humans. And also like the politics are all messed up. It's very interesting. And, you know, it's got a very nice protagonist who's this human girl named June, which normally like the one with superpowers would be the protagonist and not her sister, who is just trying to make it, you know, get by. So that's something that I like. And I also really like that it has all these like weird little asides that make it feel like real, like as an urban fantasy. Like she has to go back to the human world to buy tampons because fairies don't use them, and like little stuff like that. So it's really cute and very political intrigue, and also obviously like some romance, some will they won't they, I hate you, but like we're obviously gonna get together kind of stuff. So I've been really enjoying it.
If this is your first time listening to us, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership drop every Friday. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. While you're on Apple Podcasts, it would be awesome if you could write a quick review about the show. By doing that, you help other fans who love nerdy pop culture find us. And as a thank you, we give you a special shout out on the next episode. So try it out. Tell us what you want to see from the show moving forward. It's all upside for you. Don't forget, along with leaving a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. Or you can send an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. Now on to the main topic. Here's a clip.
Two Virginians and an immigrant walk into a room diametrically opposed foes. They emerge with a compromise, having opened doors that were previously closed. The immigrant emerges with unprecedented financial power, a system he can shape however he wants. The Virginians emerge with the nation's capital. And here's the pièce de résistance. No one else was in the room where it happened, the room where it happened, the room where it happened. No one else was in the room where it happened, the room where it happened, the room where it happened. No one really knows how the game is played, the art of the trade, how the sausage gets made. We just assume that it happens, but no one else is in the room where it happens.
That was from Hamilton. It's going to be on Disney Plus starting today. So if you didn't get to a Broadway theater to watch it yourself, you can actually watch it on your screen at home on Disney Plus. A lot of fans of Hamilton are very excited about this. We're here to talk about it a little bit. We're also going to talk about the 4th of July, which is tomorrow, and just talk about kind of the stuff we like to watch just to celebrate Independence Day. Let's start with Hamilton, though. Brian, I believe you've watched this already.
Yes, twice.
What are your thoughts?
Twice?
Yeah, well, see, I watched it. I watched the screen. So Inside Baseball, like the embargo, review embargo was like Tuesday, and I was writing something for it. So, but the screener didn't drop until Monday. So I watched it in the afternoon. It's almost 3 hours long. So I watch it right up the thing. Then I watched it again with my wife. So I've seen it twice now.
So what did you think?
That was freaking awesome. And so I wrote a piece about, my piece was about how, like, for 5 years, I stayed away from it, avoided, like, the soundtrack, YouTube, everything, you know, articles about it, documentaries. When I see like a Broadway show, I want to go to it fresh. I want to, you know, I don't want to know the songs. I don't know what happens and everything. And that's like for most musicals. If I haven't seen it, I don't listen to the soundtrack. And with Hamilton especially, I feel like everybody's saying it's like this, you know, this game-changing thing. So I'm like, well, I especially don't want to ruin it for myself. So this was 5 years of this, by the way. So it's funny because we had tickets, me and my wife had tickets for the Kennedy Center show this week. And then the pandemic happened. And obviously, well, you know, we weren't going to go to the show. So then they nicely moved, probably not for me, but, you know, I'm going to say it's for me. So they moved up the theatrical release to then streaming because it's supposed to be a theatrical release like early next year. So now it's streaming because they have it all done. And so, yeah, I finally got to watch it, and it was more than I could have ever hoped.
So, Kelly, I know that you are very familiar with Hamilton. I know you're a huge fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda. How much are you looking forward to seeing this version of it? Because I know, I believe you've seen it in person. So,
yeah.
You know, what? How much are you looking forward to seeing this as a movie?
So, it's the recording of it is of the original Broadway cast. They did it like just before some of the people left. And it's like two nights of a performance. They edited it together to be like one show. And so there's lots of different angles and zoom ins and whatnot. So I saw it in March of 2016 on Broadway, which was like essentially my parents bought me tickets for it in October of 2015, the last point at which you could like get reasonably priced tickets, even like 6 months in advance, basically, because it was before it won Grammys and then Tonys. But I loved it when I saw it, obviously, and I loved In the Heights, which was Lin-Manuel Miranda's first Broadway musical. And I am not like Brian. I tend to listen to things before I see it because I just love soundtracks so much. But it was great when I saw it. I am really excited to see it, like, first again because it's fun, and I love to rewatch things. And with Broadway, that's not really, you know, unless you can live in New York and have a lot of spare income, you can't see Broadway over and over and over again. But also, I didn't get to see, like, everything original. The actor who plays George Washington, Christopher Jackson, was out, and the actress who plays Angelica, Renee Elise Goldsberry, were both out. So they had great swing performers, but you want to see, like, The Thing. Like, The Thing is the original Broadway cast, and those are the voices you hear on the soundtrack and stuff. And so when it's a slightly different voice singing it, you're like, oh, that's kind of weird. And also, I had partial view seats again because money. So I am excited to see it. I was just about to like act out how you had to crane your neck, but again, this is a podcast, so I was excited not to have to crane my neck. And I'm really excited to share it with my husband, who isn't like super into musicals, and the investment in a Broadway show like this would have maybe not been wasted on him. But you know, sitting down to something we already, you know, pay for, is an easy way to get this exposed to people who maybe wouldn't be interested in it otherwise.
So Brian, as someone who just experienced this for the first time, what was it about Hamilton that you personally enjoyed?
There was so much because, you know, it's the music's fantastic. I mean, they have so many genres of music that he uses, but, and like the dialogue's pretty much all rap. So like the musicality like moves through, I mean, there's a flow throughout the whole show that never stops. And that I mean, really helps it move. You know, it doesn't even feel like 3 hours. I mean, it really moves along quickly. But just every character is just distinct, and you know, they each come alive in an interesting way, and you know, they tell about our history, and it's in a really cool and very honest fashion. And you know, and some people do two characters. It's kind of cool because you know, Daveed Diggs. I think he won a Tony.
Yeah.
For this. So he plays the Marquis de Lafayette in the first act, and it's like, it's a fun role. And I'm like, well, you know, I this is fine. You know, why is it Tony winning? Then like the second act starts and like, oh, okay. Cause he also plays Thomas Jefferson, and like, I won't even spoil that. Cause it's like one of the best things about it's just like, it's so fantastic. But it's just like, that's every character's like that. Every character, you know, Christopher Jackson's George Washington's just kind of like George Washington. It's like the guy you would imagine George Washington to be. And so many of the characters really kind of come alive through the original cast members. And like each of the songs tell a story. And yeah, it's not, you know, kind of know how it ends if you know history, but like it, you don't really know how it ends because it's about much more than that. It's about, you know, who tells our story after we're gone. There's a lot of big heady themes about it, and it's just magical. I mean, I don't like to use the word magical a lot, but it kind of is, because it's just like, it like takes you to another place with the music and the characters and everything. I other than like maybe Les Mis and some of the other kind of big shows that I've seen, nothing even comes close to it. And I think it might be the best musical I've ever seen.
I'm gonna start crying. This is like, I'm so happy you got to see it.
Yeah, it's like an epiphany. It's like everybody else's epiphany from 5 years ago. I had, you know, and I think that's kind of the really neat thing about, it being on Disney Plus, because there's a lot of and I understand a lot of Broadway shows and stuff, you know, they never get seen. You know, they get the movie versions. You get like Cats, or you get like Les Mis, or you get, you know, Rock of Ages that has the movie versions of it. But you hardly ever see kind of like the actual Broadway show as a movie. And I understand, because they want people to keep coming back to the, you know, pay exorbitant prices, and, you know, they want people to keep coming back to the theater. So this is a special thing, but it really shows how special it is, because you do get to see the thing before it's filtered into some other adaptation. You get to see the thing that everybody loved in the first place. And on Disney Plus, it's like 50 million people are going to see the thing on that weekend. And it's just, you know, everybody's going to be able to kind of see it. And I think that's really kind of special right now.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, though, because, you know, Broadway just announced that they were postponing performances until the end of the year. You know, I don't know if this is a unique to Hamilton thing, or if it is feasible where you could see other Broadway performances on TV at home, where, because you can't see them live for yourself, there is still an opportunity for you to see a performance and get a feel for what it's like being on Broadway. And maybe that does entice someone to, you know, buy tickets to a show and go to a show, because they're seeing, they get the theater experience at home, and then they realize, maybe I want to go see that in person and see what that's like for real. I mean, but is that feasible? Are there shows that record in a way where they can have like kind of what Hamilton's doing, where it's like a movie that you can see at home?
So, fun facts, pretty much every Broadway show is recorded at some point for posterity. And those recordings are kept in the Lincoln Center Library. But there have been there have been a handful of other Broadway shows that have taped performances and released them in some capacity. So there was Legally Blonde did that. There's a great, if it was streaming on Netflix for a while, I'm not sure if it's streaming anywhere now, but you can buy it on DVD and it's worth it. There's a great recording of the original Broadway cast of Into the Woods with Bernadette Peters as the witch. That is fantastic. The revival of Company is recorded. So it is a thing that happens. It just has to, it depends on the show and like licensing agreements and how they can make money off it. Like Legally Blonde aired on MTV and like that was a big deal. But, you know, I mean, some of this stuff already exists, and they do recordings for commercials, and they do performances for the Tony Awards, which is a huge, like, especially when I was a kid and I couldn't go to New York to see shows all the time. That was a big, I got the snippet of it in those Tony performances and held on to it as far as what I wanted to see. So there is theater you can see online. And Andrew Lloyd Webber has been showing some of his shows for free online during the pandemic. So I do think, you know, it's obviously they can't really go and record something now, but some of the stuff does live somewhere, and it just depends on if whoever owns it wants to release it. And I think it'll probably happen. Disney made a big decision with this Hamilton film.
So it brings up two other interesting questions too. If Hamilton is successful on Disney Plus, do we see more Broadway performances on TV like this? Also, is there an opportunity for Broadway to do its own thing and allow for its own kind of subscription thing where people can watch performances?
Well, there is a Broadway HD channel. I think they have like Hugh Jackman's like Oklahoma, I think, and they have some other, you know, like Kelly was talking about, you know, kind of like the film productions of things. I don't know if this is going to like kick off a huge thing, because I think it's gonna be successful no matter what. But I think still Broadway and film are gonna be two different things. I think, you know, there is probably nothing like actually seeing the musical theater experience. It is gonna be unlike, you know, if you have a good seat, it's gonna be unlike any film version of it you'll ever see. It just is. It's impossible to kind of recreate that totally. And I think that's why a lot of movies just kind of like do the kind of like, we're going to do the movie version of this thing that you love, like a Little Shop of Horrors or, you know, Music Man or, you know, many, many other things. So I don't know if you're going to get like all these productions, but I think it's a nice reminder to people that musical theater is special, and like, it is an experience like no other. And I think something like this is going to be better than the movie version of it. Like, I think like the movie version of Hamilton, which will probably happen one day, I think would be kind of cool. I don't think it's going to be this, though, because this is like everything takes place on this one little stage. I mean, wars and, you know, and it's so much of early American history takes place in this one little stage. And it's perfect the way it is. You know, I don't know if I want to see like the expansive Hamilton movie after seeing this.
I will say I'm still excited for whenever it is released, the In the Heights movie, which is a movie adaptation. You know, and I think about something like that, which is about essentially a group of people in a neighborhood in New York, the Washington Heights neighborhood. You know, there's especially because also I have more, there's more distance from the stage show. It was in the early O's, or I guess the late O's. But anyway, there's so much that a movie can explore in terms of like filming in Washington Heights. That is something that you could never capture on the stage. They had great sets with little bodegas. It was very cute. I should say a better word than cute. It's not vandalizing it. It was wonderful production design. It is really cool. Like for the trailer that I saw, which is all we've gotten from it and all we'll get for a while. Looked really amazing and immersive. And so, you know, I like that. You know, there are different ways to do the art, you know, that can be in conversation with each other.
So while we're on the subject of American history, Saturday is the 4th of July. A lot of us have stuff that we like to watch, do traditions, things like that on the 4th of July. But we'll stick to pop culture, some of the pop culture that we really love to watch on Independence Day. Brian, let's start with you. What's kind of your favorite Independence Day movie, show, book, anything?
I think it all starts and ends with Independence Day. That is the perfect thing. You know, I saw it when I was working in Disney World. I saw it in the Pleasure Island Theater at 12:01 midnight on July 4th when it first came out.
That's awesome.
And that was like one of the coolest movie experiences ever, because like the subwoofers were kicked in when like the White House got destroyed, and you know, it's a little bit rah-rah America, a little bit, you know, so we're not quite in the rah-rah America mode right now. But I think that, again, it really talks about kind of like, you know, the human spirit. And it's about, you know, action and, you know, taking care of our families and taking care of ourselves. And, you know, that president, Bill Pullman, has like, you know, one of the greatest like presidential speeches of all time in that movie. So it's just so good. And I think it's called Independence Day. It's about Independence Day. And it's just like, it captures, you know, it celebrates Independence Day in a very unhistorical way, but in a very cool way.
There are so many classic performances in this movie too, between, you mentioned Bill Pullman, but also obviously Will Smith, mm-hmm. Jeff Goldblum, who's awesome.
Harry Connick Jr. Don't forget him.
Randy Quaid, fantastic. Just so many individual performances and scenes. I still remember seeing it in the theater too, and everybody was standing up and applauding at the end when they blew up the spaceship. It was like, I mean, it was wild. I don't think I can ever remember, even with Avenger movies and everything else, I can't remember that kind of reaction to anything in a movie in my life. And it was just, I still remember it. I still love watching it every time it's on TV. It is like, that's my go-to for July 4th every single time.
Right.
I did not see it in theaters, but I live Independence Day, and I've watched it most July 4ths of my adult life because I can be kind of introverted sometimes. And so when I don't want to be outside where it is very hot and sweaty, I tend to really like watching Independence Day. We're going to do it this year. I did it one summer where I wasn't quarantined, but I was interning and didn't have a lot of social life at the time, so I did a movie marathon. We're also thinking of watching Braveheart. Just seems on theme. We have a day off from work, so you need a lot of time to watch that movie.
That's another good one, though. It's funny because every time I come to this, I always think of that one movie. Are there other TV shows, movies that jump out when you think of 4th of July?
Well, there is 1776, which I mean, I guess you could consider like the Hamilton prequel. That's
different cast.
Right. Very different. Very old. That's kind of fun. It's very patriotic. You know, it would be a nice like double feature with Hamilton if you were, you know, along those lines this weekend. Field of Dreams is the greatest movie of all time, and I think it speaks to the Americana part of the 4th of July and about baseball. And even though baseball is not being played and it probably really shouldn't this year, I think it really gets into the kind of like why we love baseball and why it's kind of ingrained in the country's soul in an interesting way. So I think that's a good another kind of like Americana movie for 4th of July.
Kelly, any TV or anything else jump out at you?
TV-wise, there aren't a lot of 4th of July TV episodes, mostly because network TV, like sitcoms are and some dramas are like the ones that really like to do holiday episodes, but they don't air over July. So there like isn't a corresponding like desire to do a 4th of July episode. But I mean, I think especially this year, the fact that PBS always airs fireworks is really important. Experiencing 4th of July through TV is going to be important this year. There's like a Macy's 4th of July. You can read one of a story that our awesome new intern, Jenna, wrote about like the different way things on TV, the specials and stuff you can watch to experience the fireworks and that kind of thing. I also think of like big war movies, like The Patriot is like the same one, but like Glory, for instance, is a movie that I think of that is appropriate during this time. You see bayonets, and it feels like a 4th of July kind of thing.
So two other things that you might want to revisit. Miracle, about the Miracle on the Ice with Kurt Russell. That's friggin' fantastic.
On Disney Plus.
Right. And also on Disney Plus, Captain America, the First Avenger. Which, you know, Chris Evans is the greatest Chris and the greatest Avenger. That's a very kind of patriotic movie, but, you know, patriotic character. Things explode. It's perfect for 4th of July. And while you're on Disney Plus, why don't you just hang out there for a while? The Rocketeer. It's not exactly like all American per se, but it's like it gets into a lot of interesting patriotic stuff. And it's superhero, you know, back in the World War II, back in the day. If you're going to like double feature 1776 and Hamilton, other double features should be Rocketeer and First Avenger.
I got to say, I just watched Captain America last week, and I'm floored at how good that movie is. Even like, I think it was 2012, 2011 maybe?
And that was
2011.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah.
So yeah. It was the last one before the Avengers.
Yeah, that still holds up. It is so good. I was
totally.
I completely forgot like half that movie, and I watched it again, and I was floored. Very good. Okay, listeners, it's your turn. What are you going to watch on the 4th of July? Are you going to watch Hamilton? Have you seen Hamilton on Broadway or in the theater? What did you think of it? Let's talk about it on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod, or you can tweet at us individually. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
I'm at Brian Truitt.
And I'm at Kalawls, K-L-A-W-L-S.
And don't forget, you can email us too. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. That'll do it this week. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilots/producers of the Mothership, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to the Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, please, please leave us a rating or a review. It helps other folks find the show, and we really love the feedback. If Apple Podcasts isn't your thing, you can also find us on Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Until next week, happy 4th. Nerds out.
Stay inside.
Bye. Wear a mask.